Cool. Well, I'm going to share my screen here, and we're talking about effective project resourcing today, and Rich and I are going to be your hosts, and Julian's not able to make it today, but he's with us in spirit. So, just to give you an orientation to our series, we had projected four different sessions here. The first one we did was business and financial structures, where we talked about how you might consider setting up your indie business. That was in March. And then we talked about contracting in June, how do you do that? And then this next one that we're doing today is effective project resourcing. And it really builds on the two prior ones. And then in December, we plan on talking about more advanced topics. So things that you might run into as your business matures and things like that. It'll be more open-ended than, we're trying to do a little bit of teaching with the rest of these series, but keep an eye out for that one. That one's going to be a great session as well in December. But without further ado, Rich, do you want to take the wheel here?
Please. So, what is resourcing, or what's effective resourcing? It, as Kate said, it builds very naturally on what we did last time, which is contracting, which is what's the work, what are you going to pay me, how long is it going to take, et cetera. And resourcing, staffing, actually is an integral part of that. And so obviously the staffing resourcing process begins during contracting. Instead of reading all of these words, I thought I would just tell a little story about a project I was involved in, medium-sized company, called a colleague of mine and said, we'd like your help designing an executive compensation package. And Scott's background was behavioral psychology and HR systems, so it was a natural, hey, sure. As he went through the contracting process, he just happened to ask, so do you have one? What's wrong with it? Why are you doing this? And the answer kind of set him back. The answer was, yeah, we have a great system. We like it a lot. One of the key components of it, though, is we went through an organization redesign last year, and the showpiece executive compensation item is how effectively have we implemented that redesign? And so we'd like you to do that. And Scott called me and said, Scott said, I'm learning. I'm an HR generalist, but I really don't know org design. Can you work with me on it? So, perfect example of contracting needed to really get specific about what's the work. And the work turned out to be diagnose the effectiveness of the organization redesign that was done a year or so ago. What are the skills required? Well, Scott had the behavioral psychology, had some of the background skills, but really this project required organization design expertise and diagnosis and analysis. And even beyond that, interviewing, friendly, congenial interviewing to find out, quote unquote, what's really going on, even things that people maybe weren't happy to share. So who's going to do the work? Scott and I agreed to partner and share the fees, and off to the races. It went really well. That last set of bullets, he took on a project that he thought he had the skills for, but he didn't. As he contracted, he found out there was a whole different set of skills. But we have a close-knit network of practitioners, and we've worked together on different projects. And so it was just very natural. Oh, okay, I need an org design guy. Let me call Rich. So this is basically how we see resourcing. It's part of contracting, but it keeps going even after the project is underway. You have to know the work, what's required, who can I get, who's available, and what's it going to take? And then have a network, make sure that you can resource the projects you take on or don't take them on. So let's look a little bit. We have a flow on the next slide that basically looks at these same features, but a little bit more. I'm more of a visual person. This is kind of what works for me. So what work is required? What's the complete set of skills? Here's where some consultancies fall a little short. What are my real own skills? What are the things I think I'm good at that I'm actually good at in a particular project? And we've had several projects where we needed some additional project management skills. Rather than bringing in somebody from the outside, we ask the client, do you have an up and coming high potential leader that you could put onto our project to project manage? And that works very well. And then finally, an active network of people that you can count on. Confirm the skills are available and that you can afford them. And then contingencies. Obviously, people get sick, people have emergencies. But a very curious thing happened during this executive compensation program, which is going through the interviews, getting pretty reasonable coherence around what people thought. And excuse me while I get my cat out of the way. Came to the chief financial officer. And he said, God, I'm so glad you're doing this. This is just really exciting. How's it going so far? And was sort of grilling. I wasn't interviewing him. He was grilling me on, what are people saying? What this, that? And then finally, the long pause, and he said, so the reason I'm asking is I was brought in as the heir apparent. The founder is retiring at the end of this year. And I'll be named to take his place. And I want to, we just did this redesign. I want to know how well it's working and what I need to do to make it work better. So, and he said this whole executive, yeah, that it wasn't quite a smoke screen, but I really don't care what the executives get compensated this year. We're going to change it all next year anyway. So, as far as I'm concerned, the answer is 3.25. Put that in the report. But what I'm interested in is where are we as an organization, and what do we need to do to really follow through on that redesign? So, unexpected needs can be that sort of, oh, wow. There's a sponsor, and then there's an Uber sponsor, and there are different drivers, and as conditions change and information surfaces, you may need to. It turns out we had the skills for that kind of diagnosis and organizational alignment. But if we hadn't, we would have needed to bring them in. So that is sort of in a nutshell, resourcing. And what we haven't touched on is, well, we touched on lightly. So, how, if you bring in more than one person, how do they get along? Well, this is not going to be an hour around team building, but one of the things we emphasize is that trusted network of people that you can work with. They're people that you can work with. And one of the skills that you really want to make sure you have in your consulting team is an ability to get along, ability to reflect, ability to learn and adapt.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things too to build on what Rich is talking about, you know, I kind of look at my business almost like a general contractor sometimes, right? And part of this is because we're doing some work on our house, and so I'm this thought of general contractor and subcontractors is really alive in my life right now. You know, one of the things that's really important with your clients is to build this relationship, this trusted relationship. And just like with a contractor in your own home, you know, it can often be like, oh, wow, you did such a great job on my kitchen. Could you take a look at the bathroom? And this idea of resourcing kind of expands your reach, right? Expands your ability to serve the client. And you know, there are a couple of ways to do it. So there's the way that we were just talking about, which is, hey, let's put it as a part of the, you know, general proposal. You can also increase your reach in staffing a project through you know, just introducing that other skill set. So that happens with me. I'm a compensation consultant, which is you know, not a normal thing for us at ODF, but what will often happen is, you know, folks are like, well, you know, compensation people are weird. I'm not one of them, but I know one, right? And so somebody will say, well, you know, you should talk to Kate. The thing that's nice about that is that they are expanding their ability to help the client, and it makes them look like, wow, you know, they've got this whole network of people. And sometimes I come in as a subcontractor for another consultant. Sometimes I have folks come in as subs for me. But all in all, you know, extending the services that you can provide your client really enables you to have a more flexible, more sustainable practice in general. And so it's really something that we think is an important factor.
Yeah, along those lines, I was called in for a project a couple of years ago, and it was, we would like you to walk us through a strategy process, which, okay, fine, that's in my wheelhouse. And it became very clear after the first couple of interviews that this was an organization with four diverse groups of stakeholders, each of whom harbored distrust and anger about the other three. And as we started thinking about what to do, it became very clear the first thing we have to do is some kind of group therapy. So, fortunately, one of my partners, William Zybok, is expert in that behavioral psychology field and was able to come in and do the work. But my gosh, if I left to my own devices, I would have just, I have no clue as to what to do. So that network is critical, knowing who to call for what purposes.
Yeah. So what we thought we would do is, well, first of all, given the timing of things, what areas of staffing or sourcing projects would you like to hear more from us before we break you out into your groups?
I had just two questions. The first is, Kate, is it possible for us to get the slides after the session?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think Tanya, can you speak to how that?
I'll put the recording of the whole session and the slides, and if any content really builds in the chat, on our past events page on the website. And then I will send out an email to everybody who registered when those are posted and available.
I have a question. I put it in the chat. Do you, does Kate, Rich, or anybody, do you use any tools to assess like a potential contractor's working style?
Well, So typically the folks who are in my network are people that I have worked with before, either in corporate life or, you know, as a part of a team that has done things for other clients. That said, I am a huge fan of the Colby A Index, and I can wax poetic for hours about it. But one of the things that I really like about that is that it looks at people's problem solving styles, and that's really helpful for me. And you know, knowing how people like to take information in and deliver information and approach problems, and being able to have a diverse problem solving set that we're offering to the client is really important. So that's kind of my go-to.
Yeah, I'm a much less structured kind of guy, much more intuitive. And as with Kate, people I've worked with, if it's not someone I've worked with but come highly recommended, I have found just sitting down with some of the concept slides that I use with my clients, just sitting down and talking through, first of all, get a sense of what their approach is, because they're kind of reverberating against it. But also, I get a real sense of their interpersonal style. And those styles range from, oh, wow, yeah, this, yeah, I don't use these particular concepts, but yeah, this resonates. This is really great. As opposed to, oh, I don't think that's right. No, that doesn't work for me with my clients. And very quickly, I get an intuitive sense of, is this going to work or not?
So, Cecilia.
Hi, I have a question. I guess just around like your example of you go through a contracting process, but once you get in there, you uncover there's something else that I need to resource it.
Yep.
How do you approach then going back to the client, because that's going to be additional, you know, cost to bring in somebody else to do the new scoped work. So how do you approach that with the client?
I love this question, because this is one of those things that I never really thought about before I ran into it myself. But I'm always very clear in my proposals to talk about all the things that are not included in the proposal. So chances are pretty good that, you know, if the client is already thinking about, oh, there are things that are not included, then, you know, something else that pops up also might not be included, right? So I think having a discussion about, yeah, you know, we would love to help you with, you know, XYZ thing. Like, we had somebody just to ask us to do some job descriptions that were not, you know, I hate doing job descriptions, and that's not ever going to be part of my proposal. So, you know, then we can have a discussion about ring fencing, you know, oh, okay, well, I hear that you want to do this other thing. We'd love to facilitate that process for you. We have some resources that we can call on to get that work done. And, you know, I can price that for you separately. How does that land? And typically they're just delighted to have a way to solve their problem. And so the additional cost doesn't typically phase the clients that I work with. And I work with primarily a nonprofits and B corporations. So I'm not working with a ton of really big companies with giant pocketbooks and stuff, but they're usually pretty reasonable. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
So there's a question in chat. I think, Ariel, this is your question about how do you navigate client hesitation about bringing in other people? Kate, do you want to take that, or do you want me to give my response?
Why don't you go first, and I've got some thoughts too.
So I've run into that a number of times, and one of the the watchwords I was going to introduce at the beginning of this whole session is the most important thing I've learned about this part of consulting is just to listen. Listen for what's being said. Listen for how it's being said. Listen for what's not being said. And so I've had several cases where you can tell there's hesitation. I just name it. I just say, wow, it looks like you're hesitant. I'd like to bring in Scott. He's an HR expert, and he could really help me with this part of the project. You seem to be hesitant. What's that all about? And what typically comes up is we can't afford it, and which we can talk about. We can talk about scope versus cost, or this is extremely confidential. We don't want any more people knowing about it. And it's a completely different issue. So, okay, it had a couple of those where, do you have people with these skills in your organization already that we could bring in and use on the project? And that's worked extremely well, because as opposed to bringing in an outsider that would have to come up to speed, they already know the ground. And that was extremely helpful. Or it may just be, I'm comfortable with you. I don't want to get to know somebody else, which is a different issue. So it depends, but the key for me is what's behind it. What's really going on? What am I not hearing?
And to add on to that, I think, you know, with when clients hire my firm, they want to know, I mean, I've got like a super ridiculous amount of experience. And so I think one of the things that clients can sometimes worry about is, well, if somebody's going to come in and work with you, how much time of yours are we actually going to get? Right. And so helping them to understand that, hey, you know, I'm going to be there for all the client presentations. I'm going to be there for all the important meetings, and that, you know, having somebody to run the, you know, interview sessions and, you know, manipulate data in the background and all that kind of stuff actually frees me up to be more present with them for the things that really matter. So that can be a common thing that clients get concerned about as well.
Thank you.
Marisa.
Yeah, thanks. So I do staff with a lot of other independent consultants in my network. One of the challenges that I've had is that none of us are ever full-time on any one project, right? We're doing different projects and bringing people together. We're allocated probably appropriately, whether that's, you know, 15 hours a week, 20 hours a week, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But then the client has its own schedules, and we often can't make everybody else's schedules fit that. So senior leadership team meets on a Tuesday at 9 o'clock. Well, not everybody from the team is going to be available on that Tuesday at 9 o'clock. So we've worked things out. We have backups. We have people who can certainly work in place of others who can't be in a meeting. But I just wondered if you had any other thoughts or tips about how to manage the team of independent consultants' schedule while still being responsive to the client's schedule, which is often set and we can't, you know, sort of shift their schedules.
That's a great question and very relevant in today's world, where we're virtually networked with people around the world. What I tend to do is build that into the contracting, first of all. So the contract is there are going to be these five of us involved, but not everybody's going to be at every meeting. That's just a given. And one thing that we have found helps is either for the whole project or for different phases of the project, one person is the accountable, visible liaison, and they're at every meeting and they take the lead. Kate, what about you?
Same. I think having that kind of key account manager role is really important. Yeah. So I think it's time for us to break up into small groups. and talk about, you know, what are some of the concerns that we have, as well as some, what are the things that excite us? Because, you know, when I first started doing independent consulting, and, you know, this is my second iteration of independent consulting. I did it when my kids were little. And when I first started doing it, I thought, oh, well, you know, unless I can do everything, then I can't do anything. And that is like, you know, what's lovely now, and as I've learned a lot more, is that it does extend my reach quite a bit and it lessens the pressure. So I wish I would have known this when I first started, but you know, I'm wondering what kinds of opportunities do you think that, you know, knowing these things about how you might staff projects, how this could help you, and what kind of possibilities you see for your own practice. So we're going to ask you to answer two questions as a group, you know, and have a little discussion. So the first one is, you know, what kinds of concerns or struggles do you have currently with staffing or resourcing your projects? And then the second one is really rooted in that possibilities. What kind of possibilities are you seeing as a result of thinking about how you resource projects? So we're going to break you into small groups, and we're going to give you about 15 minutes to chat about these two topics, and then we're going to come back and hear about what you've learned from each other. So Tanya, do you want to?
Yep, let me check and make sure we've got a couple people that dropped. So make sure the rooms are still pretty well balanced. We're good. Okay, and then you'll automatically be pulled back together here at the 15 minutes in.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Hello, Pooja.
Hello. Hi, Tanya. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Not bad at all. Not bad.
Well, good. Well, we are about halfway through the session and we just started. There's about 12, 13 minutes left in a breakout room that they're discussing two things. And one of them is, what have you struggled with in resourcing your projects? And then the second question is, what opportunities or what are you most excited about in the potential of resourcing or partnering with other consultants to do your client work? So if you would like, I'm happy to put you into one of the breakout rooms. So you just started about two minutes ago.
Oh, yeah, sure. Please, please, Tanya. Sorry, I was late to attend this call. Sorry.
It happens. We had people jumping in the whole first 30 minutes, so no worries at all.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Welcome back. How were your chats? Can I get thumbs up, thumbs down, neutral? Good. Awesome. So let's talk about first the challenges, the struggles that you're having. What came up in the groups?
Something that our group talked a lot about is access to mid and junior level resources to really round out our teams. A lot of 1099s independents are fairly senior resources. And so we don't either know or have that network to pull into where those people aren't really 1099s because they're still, you know, developing their careers and working other places. So how do you add more mid to junior level people on the team of independent consultants?
Awesome. Any solutions can come up with that?
Grad schools.
Yeah. You mean part-time intern-like people?
Yeah, Lisa was mentioning that she's pulled in some interns from a nearby American University here in the DC area, but also just looking for people who grad school, grad students or graduates, recent graduates often have other careers already. So they're not like new into the working environment. They might have someone they're pivoting and they want to do something different. And so that might be a source to you know, get that more mid-level resource.
That's a great idea.
What else came up?
Well, before we leave that, one thing that I've often done is look at or ask, talk to my clients and say, here's one of the needs we have on our consulting team. I would love if there's someone in your organization that, and they don't have to be incredibly skilled, but we would love to bring them onto the team. It would give your organization more insight into what we're doing, and it would leave some of that behind. And that's worked extremely well, especially many of the HR. So we work with executives and change projects. In many cases, the HR people are kind of on the periphery, not really centrally involved. And they jump at the chance to have some of their people involved this way.
Great tip.
Yeah, we talked about that as well in terms of the effectiveness in our consulting after we leave. The idea of focusing not just on outputs, but outcomes as well. And the advantages that using internal resources within the organization itself to fill out key roles so that when you leave the organization, the work you do lives on after your organization has left and continues toward the outcomes that the client is contracted for after you've left. So you're building a capability within the client to be self-sufficient and to carry the work that needs to be done all the way through and including the outcome that was desired in the first place.
Nice. What else? Any thoughts on the things that are exciting to you, more the possibilities that are emerging?
I'll just share that in our group, we had several people who were really just starting out or trying to scale their business. So there wasn't, you know, necessarily a challenge, but more so kind of looking for advice on scaling and building strategic partnerships.
Awesome. And what is the wisdom of the group on how to do those things?
We ran out of time, but, you know, got some interesting feedback definitely on pulling in internal resources. One of our participants is kind of looking to scale a coaching business and how you get the client comfortable with you know, working with other people. So I didn't have a chance to give feedback on that, but was thinking, you know, it's really just building those relationships with other coaches and yourself getting a comfort level with them, that they're the right people to partner with. And just building that relationship. So that would be my input on that.
Yeah. Mm. Awesome.
And I think another thing too is professional organizations like the one we're participating in right now is a wonderful way to discover talent that you can incorporate mm-hmm. into your consulting teams. Because informally you're developing relationships, you're understanding the reputations of people in the field, you get insights as to how they think and how they work. So organizations like this serve as a wonderful source in terms of recruiting people to staff your projects to discover talent and apply it to your work.
Yeah, I know some folks who've gotten connected with other consultants to leverage their skills on behalf of a larger project and stuff through ODF. So that's pretty cool too.
But Tanya, you had your hand up. Do you want to?
Well, I was clapping at the use of the you know, communities that you're part of. So I provide support to ODF, and I provide support to a handful of other people who have consulting practices. And one of them that I support is a master at partnering with other people and bringing them in for various sized learning and development programs and for coaching. And he has really done a great job of staying connected to people that went through the certification programs and are part of the training that he did early on. Mm-hmm. He's a part of, you know, local organizations like Arizona ODN. And so he goes to those networking events to get to know people. So he really does have a sense of what they might be bringing into the partnership. And mm-hmm. someone had commented about comfort level with bringing in other coaches and that type of a personal business. And where I've seen him use that opportunity is he can recommend somebody as a coach under his partnership, maybe at a more affordable price point than if he were to be the person doing the coaching directly, knowing that they're working with him in partnership as they're kind of going through the process. So awesome. Just going to share what I've seen some of my folks do.
Nice.
I can confirm how well that works with ODF. So Tanya, you'll know that I think it's only 1 or 2 weeks ago I sent out an email to a few people saying I'm looking for someone. So that and I got a great response. I think I spoke to about 6 experts. Yeah. And found someone to add to my project. So thanks, Tanya, for that email that you forwarded. Also, Kate, you asked a question.
Uh-oh, you're freezing. Jody, you've frozen for us. I'm going to move us over. I'm sorry, Jody, but you've frozen. So we've got some top tips at the end here. So let me share my screen again. Okay. And these are our top tips. Rich, do you want to do odds and I'll do evens?
Absolutely. And these are things that we have been talking about throughout the session, but we just can't emphasize enough. Staffing really is an essential part of contracting. It starts there. It, you know, scope and staffing are intimately related, and it continues throughout the project.
Yeah, and the next one is really be clear about what you can contribute and how you're going to be managing your own piece of this versus the other folks who are on the team.
And just to build on that, Kate, you were talking about the home construction work you're doing and being a construction manager. And that is an important role in these projects. But if you are the construction manager, you need to leave time for that. You can't be the expert consultant on other parts of the project, perhaps. So number three, again, we've talked about both in the session, the breakouts, and then the Q&A just now, but that extended network of people you know or people you are getting to know, have contact with, have relationships with. And this is for my partners and I, this is one of the main reasons we go to ODF, ODN, and other places just to foster and nurture those relationships.
And really be clear with your client about who's doing what, because it's important that they know your role, the role of other consultants that you're bringing to bear into the project, as well as what their roles are and what they'll be bringing.
Plan for contingencies. Let me just—I mean, we've talked about this, but let me just share a call I got on Friday from one of my associates, Sheila Gaskins, and she said, "Yeah, really looking forward to that work we're going to do together. Unfortunately, I've been hospitalized with a blood clot, so good luck with it."
Yeah, it's very challenging. So I'm going to stop sharing here. we have 2 more minutes left. One of the things that we wanted to do too is invite you to share in the chat any topics that you'd like for us to be covering in our final session on in December. So if you can do that, we're happy to answer questions here for the next couple of minutes. Mike, were you gonna share something?
It hasn't quite formed in my mind yet, so.
Okay. Awesome.
What would be some of the content you'd be looking for in that last session? Could you elaborate further?
Well, we talked a couple of different things. So, the Q&As seem to be very alive for us when we do these sessions. So we thought we might do some more robust Q&As. But we also talked about things like how do you extend, right? When you're getting to the end of an engagement, how do you extend with a client or without being too salesy, how do you how do you increase the engagement with a client after the initial engagement is completed? That's kind of an advanced topic. We talked about, well, are there certain things that we would recommend during different phases of the consulting life cycle? Like when you're first starting your independent consultancy, when you're scaling, when you're winding it down, we could do something like that. But we're pretty open right now. So if there are topics that you'd like, this is the time to shape that.
I
So.
know one of the things, building on what you were sharing with us there, we always were looking for how to extend the breadth of our offerings, particularly at the end of a successful engagement. So one of the things we always had an educated ear for was, however it was phrased, is what else do you do? And transition to generate more business with the same client, which I'd be looking for tips in that area.
Cool.
Excellent.
Yeah, I love this idea of Shelley's with about testimonials and things like that too. That's a really terrific thing. I think testimonials maybe and referrals because for some of the larger RFPs that we respond to, they always want to have references and stuff. So that could be something that we talk about as well.
So, Shelley, is your question on the company logos? Is that like using client logos on your website for people you've done work for?
Yep.
What's legally appropriate?
Can you just like, what kind of authorization do you need, if any?
Yeah.
I would say all of my clients have done that. And they just check with the HRBP that they're partnering with to confirm that it's okay that they're, you know, listed as somebody they've worked with.
Cool. Well, this gives us lots of good ideas for next time. And so we really appreciate it. And thank you everyone for your engagement, and we'll look forward to talking to you in December.
Right. Everybody, I hope your fall comes quickly. It cannot be soon enough here in Phoenix. We may get to see it by the time fall starts officially. And thank you, Kate and Rich, for your time and energy putting together and helping to facilitate this conversation. We do appreciate your efforts on behalf of all of our community members. And I wish everyone a great rest of your day. I'll stay on the line for a moment or two if anybody has any questions that I can help with afterwards.
And I'll stay on for a minute too, Tanya. I have a couple of questions about your thoughts on December.
All right. Thanks.